Welcome back to the Disrupt Education Podcast. I have Allie Privet. Allie, how are you doing?
I'm well. It's springtime. The sun is out, and I'm very excited for our guest this week. This was a topic that you and I have kind of like wanted to explore more. And in leading up to this podcast, I've really been thinking about the spaces that I've been in and what that means, like whether it's your home, whether it's a place of work, and in particular, an educational building. This past month, I've done some subbing jobs in different buildings, and that has made me think about like their function and how people learn in them. And that led me down a path of like reflecting on classrooms I've taught in, and like, and I'll always remember this one story. And I wanted to start the podcast with this, is that I taught with an awesome physical education teacher, and he was the basketball coach for the high school that I worked at. And he always said that in the winter months that he only saw darkness because he got to school before the sun came up. He was in a classroom with no lights on, and then was in a gym building where there weren't any natural windows. And so for 4 months of the year, essentially never saw sunlight. And I think that is a great way to kind of start this podcast with thinking about, like, as you're listening to this episode, what kind of spaces are you in, and start thinking about those, because our guest today is going to talk about why that matters.
Right. We have Mary with us. Mary, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully, Peter and Allie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we are so happy that you're here because we are going to start talking about ergonomics, design, school environments, learning environments in general, and you are that person. Can you give us a brief like overview of who you are and what you do?
Sure. I've been practicing for almost 20, probably 29 years as an architect professionally. I've worked primarily in the realm of education. So you're my people. You're the people that I talk to every day as we're shaping projects. So we're all kindred spirits. I'm passionate about maximizing positive educational outcomes, understanding, to your point, Allie, that these buildings are really second homes for folks. This is where they're spending so very much of their time. I feel very grateful to really love what I do, and to be to play a role in really making spaces that allow students and staff and everyone in the community who go to these facilities, really have some aspirational, experiences in their educational journeys. So we create environments to set students up for success in every way that we can, maximizing the funding that we have available, understanding that it's often limited. And as an architect, I'm so keen. I might end up being just, interviewing you all because,
Yes, please
the
do.
best thing to do is to start by listening to understanding the experiences that you've had and the types of spaces that there's empirical data that shows what types of spaces people perform well in, and we know natural daylight is a huge factor, so that's kind of a no-brainer. I was sharing, or sharing just, we have in common that we all grew up in the or spent time in the Midwest, and I learned early in my career about the work of Frank Lloyd Wright, who was inherently a designer who thought of things from a passive design standpoint, which is extremely beneficial, but also he thought of the ideas of family and community in all of his buildings and really infused nature. And daylighting was a huge part of something that was key with most of his projects, and how to embed nature into his work. So I feel fortunate to have had that early experience that I've carried with me, hopefully to the benefits of the projects that I'm working on.
Definitely. You know what's interesting, and I failed to tell you this before we started recording. I worked in Oak Park and River Forest High School for 15 years, so right down the road was Frank Lloyd Wright's, and there's a few of his homes there as well. It's really cool to hear that. It's interesting because I'll start my story, in addition to Ally's, with just today. We're in an entrepreneurial class where we're teaching students, how to question potential customers first and then pull a challenge out of that by the customers or people just empathizing with people. And one of the groups was concerned about students falling asleep in school, and they may do an app, they maybe do something to help people stay motivated or stay awake or try to figure that out. And lo and behold, and here's this podcast, one of the top three things that they heard, especially in school, were rooms without windows and boring rooms. Yeah, how do you? Let's walk through that, right? Because I'm a huge proponent. I know I feel better even as an educator. I feel better as a person where there is nature that I can see. Yeah, where do we start with this, Mary? Because I don't, as an educator, these are these 70s buildings. You're exactly right. And a lot of them have these challenges with no sunlight. And we'll start there. What are some things that you see, you know the data on, and kind of unpack how do we get sunlight in our rooms, or what are some ways that you have seen?
Fantastic question, Peter. It's a so important and it is astounding that the line of thinking in the 70s was, let's eliminate all distraction, and it was really, and so we have a surplus of buildings, we're dealing with them every day. How do we get daylight in these buildings? Also, an important thing is to think about, when you're doing a project, like let's say you're doing a roofing project, how do you think about doing the best good within the scope of the work, and kind of thinking about being future forward, so adding PV, adding solar tubes. So there are sometimes structural constraints, especially in California where I'm practicing. A lot of these buildings have shear walls that would be costly to add windows on. Certainly, as much as you can add windows, because the view, getting a visual break, having that visual variety is really important. So as much as you can add exterior windows where you're limited, which oftentimes we are, I deal with it every day. Adding solar tubes, or solar tubes are really inexpensive. The unfortunate thing is they provide natural daylighting, which improves the environment because you can see kind of the passage of time at least. But if you really want to get like a glimpse of the sky, something like a daylight monitor would be a larger, way, and it can increase, ceiling and room, ceiling room volume as well. We were looking at that in on a recent project, just to be able to provide, even some views of some tree, some tree in nature.
Yeah. What is a
Also,
daylight monitor? What is that? What I for people who don't know.
it's a skylight that actually, adds height to the room. So it
Oh,
actually
okay.
lifts up the room, and it may have sides to it. It could be like sloped, and so you could actually glimpse, something of the sky and
Nice.
get some feeling of nature if, windows are a complete limitation. We're also looking on some student housing projects at area, I mean, and this kind of can apply to an educational environment to some degree, especially if you have these constraints. Looking at lighting that changes color temperature throughout the day, it's no replacement. I'm going to say it's no replacement, but we're sometimes using, on student housing, we're using it just in common areas too, just spaces that like corridors and things that don't have windows, generally. But things, terrapin bright green is a resource that has a lot of this empirical data illustrating the positive physiological and biological effects that natural daylighting has on individuals from a health and wellness and performance standpoint. So, yeah, I mean, to your point, Peter, seeing, getting that visual break, it's really important. So if you can add windows, as much as possible, and then, look at the options of skylights and different types of skylights depending on your roof system. In our instance, we were dealing with a 1970s building and with a structural structural system set in place. We're trying to maximize these daylight monitors. They also, had a limited height to the bottom of the joist, so it was like 10 feet, and they were using these spaces for kind of like maker spaces and robotics and stuff like that. So we wanted to lift up the ceiling height to allow for some of these components to really do their thing, do their thing. So we were looking at like 10 foot by 10 foot, sections, and that's pretty significant. That's a large enough kind of volume to be able to like actually get glimpses of daylighting and I mean, glimpses of nature, clouds at least rolling by, and maybe some treetops.
Yeah, nice.
I mean, it makes such a world of difference in the learning environment. And I think about they moved the SAT classroom like on a Saturday morning when kids had to take it. It used to be in this like essentially dark, no window room. And they changed it one time, and all the kids said it was like such a better experience. And their scores were higher probably. And you can just kids do notice the learning spaces that they're in. And so when you're looking at like a school project, and thinking about kind of like best practices in general, like for people who are undergoing construction, or they're on a committee, or their school might be thinking about changes that they could make. What are some kind of maybe top three best practices for, kind of good learning environments outside of like daylight, or that just helps make a good learning space in general from an architecture point of view?
Great question, Ellie. At the top three, we think about this a lot because especially when we have different financial constraints. So I was talking with some colleagues. What are the top three things a school district can really do if they have, natural daylighting, that's a no-brainer. So we're not going to count that one aside from daylighting. A connection to outdoors. And so often, we're providing, especially here in California, where we can have outdoor learning. It was really beneficial. Campuses that had already a lot of spaces that were kind of covered with shade, designing buildings that have deep overhangs so that you can take the classroom out and be kind of covered, protected from the elements. And I think this could also work where I've become aware of a school that actually operates year-round outdoors, and it's in the Midwest. So they're kind of designing to provide, shelter in these ways so that you can be outside and teach. So looking at ways the building can kind of provide that shelter so that you can move seamlessly outdoors. Flexibility is a big one. So different types, I think we're seeing a lot that with project-based learning and different types of teaching modalities, that ha not having a classroom with just a stand, like we like I was taught in, it's just chairs facing forward in lecture-based style classrooms that look at, gosh, maybe the four corners of the room are the teaching walls when groups need to be breaking out, and how do you like set up the classroom both from a furnishing standpoint as well as technology to really be able to flex and allow students to move about, gather in different, different types of group sizes. It's like furniture and I guess technology infrastructure. Is it every wall a teaching wall? Are the corners a teaching corner? I've seen a lot of classrooms that have, different types of seating, to accommodate these, just some couches and some chairs and things that move around easily. And then I guess I was kind of lumping technology and furnishing and with a flexibility idea. I guess, what's an, I mean, there's so many important qualities, I guess the idea too that how can the school support community and be a part of community? So, really having spaces that can really be a community amenities and, be centers of the community. Some of the most successful schools I've been to are active, 18 hours a day. They have, the community community coming to performing arts events, using athletic facilities and joint use, I think is a really good way to infuse that sense of community in campus and also bring some funding back to schools through through kind of joint use facilities. I could probably go on and on and on, but does that hit your
Oh,
top
that,
three?
yeah, that's a good, like a good kind of just idea for people to think about. When we're thinking about schools and sustainability or just the ergonomics of a building, it, I don't know, it's not something that Peter and I always talk about, but yet it does impact the learning environment. And when you sit down and really think about where are you working or learning or teaching, all of those things, you're oftentimes just given a classroom, or you're given a space, or you're told to go on this schedule, and it seems like it should be a topic that is addressed more on the forefront rather than like we could be proactive with more learning spaces. And I remember early in my teaching career, this flexible seating idea was really, really hot. It was hot about like 10 to 15 years ago, like for elementary kids in particular, and then it kind of trickled up. But you know, if I hear about stories and people talking about, you know, oh, we need to innovate and change schools, it's like, okay, but what does that mean for the physical buildings, right? So just that's kind of how Peter and I even came up with this kind of topic to think about, like, oh, well, an architect, what kind of challenges do they deal with, and how do they bring their expertise into a school building for kind of merging that, the gap that I think is there.
I think one of the and to kind of piggyback off of that. I do teach in four or five different classrooms every semester. I'm in the business department, so we're kind of bouncing around, and a classroom definitely does have an effect on how students respond to curriculum and to each other. And that is super, it's super evident. I have certain classrooms with no sunlight. I have certain classrooms with lots of sunlight. I have it just depends on the layout of the class, those types of things. But I kind of wanted to, so 20, 29 years, when you see that, for us, I think in education, I would say, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, it was like the Google, right? Everybody was like Google, 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 right? And for the business people anyway, like we were looking at those, we were starting to take a look at how can we create our classrooms to mimic what is happening in quote unquote the real world. What are your experiences with that over 29 years? That's quite a resume of really seeing things evolve. What are some of your most favorite things that you've seen evolve, and maybe some of the well, frankly, the coolest things that you've been able to do in schools?
That's a great question. Yeah, things have I remember those times and the fact that, well, it's still happening. How can we create environments that prepare students for the future and careers that don't exist even
Right.
yet? So maker spaces, spaces that, and when we're planning, we're trying to plan too from a flexible standpoint, understanding the space is going to need to adapt over time. So how do we provide utilities that are flexible, and so from a building design, how do we, if it's a new project, limit structural components so that the space can flex, not have brace frames, going through spaces and things like that that will allow it to change shape over time. And just the idea of providing different types of maker spaces, that reflect, kind of the work around that geographical area and influenced by it. So we are doing a lot of work in the kind of Silicon Valley, San Jose, and there's one district that we're working with that is phenomenal. Partially because the director of facilities, he came, he has a background in architecture. He's just extremely innovative. The whole district is extremely community focused and student focused as well. So I learned about this district through touring. I'm member of the Northern California Board of Association for Learning Environments. And there are some tours that we get to experience different kinds of spaces. So we were visiting their student union project, and it is one of my favorite educational buildings ever. It was and the presentation was by the architect who worked on it, the principal who was involved deeply in the planning and other staff, and then the director of facilities and other folks. So it was really just a collaborative effort to shape this building. What was so amazing about it, and then we were subsequently currently working on a building on the same campus. It's a performing arts building, which I'll tell you about. But the student union, when you walk in, it's like a student union space, but it's designed as a reflection of spaces where students want to be when they're not in school. So it kind of has a feel of Westfield shopping mall. I mean, like a mall. Like it has like it's so cozy. It has different sizes of seating. There's some big cats. There's lighting that is ambient. It's not just linear lighting. It's very like not educational facility traditional that you would think of. It just feels like a space you want to be in. And excellent day lighting. There's a huge TV screen that when they have like World Cup and events like that, it becomes like the place where students
Nice.
are hanging out. The whole community is hanging out, and the associated student body is charged with like resetting the space. So it gives these young student leaders and students kind of accountability for owning the space and taking care of it. They have, like a maintenance program that is more like an airport where it's like continually 24 hours a day, I mean, not 24, through the course of the school day, so that the restrooms aren't just being cleaned once a day. The folks are going through campus and constantly maintaining it within this building. So there's a volume in the middle, which is where the principal's office is, right in the middle of the student union. So you have admin. So the principal as leader is like right there, not tucked in the way back where they have a room out the exterior door. So that demonstrates like I'm here. And so there's this passive kind of supervision. There's a library. The copy room attached to the library is open to students and faculty. And they have paper cutters, copiers, reams of paper for students to use. So you have teachers in there doing things, students coming in there. The admin for the building is waits. The admin from the campus has to pass all the way through to get to their mailboxes. So they're constantly passing through this building. So it's constantly engaging. It's giving a lot of students a chance and teachers a chance to experience, serendipitous, encounters. And it's a fantastically programmed. There's a student resource center that's set up like a little store. It looks like a retail environment. So you go in. So if anyone needs clothes or water or food, it's not a stigmatizing space. It's a space that looks fantastic. And then further, the food service, they really prior to this project, they had like a different area where students who had subsidized lunches would go versus other students who could go off campus and eat. But this building is so fantastic. Everyone wants to be there, and they kind of flattened. Basically, everyone now has a card that they load. If it's subsidized, but they go to this little bank storefront in the building to get their car loaded in whatever fashion if it's subsidized, but everyone has the same card at the end of the day. And so it's really created a sense of, equity, inclusion, community. It's such a fantastic building. So we were competed in a design build process for the performing arts on this campus. And we were so excited. We won the project. And the building that we're working on is also incredibly, this one is like super flexible. A typical performing arts theater has fixed seating. And one of the issues on campuses is sometimes it's only used like 4 times a year or 5, depending on how strong your theater program is. Otherwise, it sits somewhat empty. So there you have this building on campus that is single use in some ways. So they were like, we're not going to do that. We need to do something that's going to be used year round. And the concept was like a 24-hour talent show. And the fact that this is a space that could be used by a community for weddings. It could be rented by a local comedy troupe or something, and then it's, obviously used for student events. So the performing arts portion of it has telescoping seating. So it's a large room. The stage is not elevated, and there are classrooms around the back of the stage that are visual arts classrooms that during the course of a regular school day, these students can spill out into this, what is the stage area, but it's basically a gathering area for students with seating. There's a skyfold door that is the proscenium curtain, basically. So the space can function. We have a diagram that shows like the five ways that this building flexes, basically. And it's being used like it's going through approvals right now, and it'll be going into construction very soon. But this idea was possible because we have a very innovative client, and it's actually a model that we're trying to like share with other districts because we know that that space is at such a premium, and to build a new building that is used for one purpose isn't sometimes the best use of money. So I think this is a really great kind of prototype project that we've been really fortunate to be involved with.
Sounds like you have to have right, Allie, innovative admin and leaders. Where have we heard that before?
We've heard that many times that is a key piece for, anything getting done in a school district, but it certainly is something that, I think stakeholders and community members who are voting and honestly have a huge impact on whether or not projects like this move forward, and they don't even realize it, like how much power they have with bond issues. And springtime is oftentimes when those things get voted on. So the timing of this episode is great for people to consider that, like, what are the innovative projects that your school district is trying to move forward with? And if they're not, how can you kind of influence that? These projects take time. And so it's like, I know that when bond issues have passed in school districts that I've worked for, oftentimes it's literally just maintenance stuff, like to keep the buildings in operating condition. It's like the bare minimum, because that's what they think that stakeholders will only approve, right? Or they'll add solar paneling or things that are, sustainable, like, they're gonna swap all the light bulbs. I remember they're swapping all the light bulbs from incandescent to LED and like blinding us with these like very, very bright bulbs at
It's a
six
free light
o'clock
in
in
the
the
sky. It's called the sun. I'm just saying.
morning. Yeah.
Well, that's where color temperature is really important
Yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like these things that, the school districts are doing their best, like the leaders who are working, under the budgets and the constraints that they're given. But I wonder, if the community was behind, this kind of multifunction and spaces that are more integrated and not single use, because how receptive would communities be to projects like these? And I think it's a topic that's not as discussed as much as it should be, because it's hard to even get approval for some of these projects. But then it's like, if you have deteriorating buildings and you have to maintain them, right? Like, okay, but what else can we do? And thinking outside the box. And I think all school districts are going to be more and more pressed to kind of do that as the buildings age. And it's like, at some point you can't just have students in like kind of an unsafe environment. You're going to have to totally like either knock it down or build somewhere else, or at some point. So I'm curious in like, what other trends are you seeing for kind of like adaptive learning spaces, or maybe like the challenges around predicting, well, what will people need in 5 to 10 years? Because I'm sure like that's what's being built now is what people thought they needed 5 to 10 years ago, and no one could have predicted that almost 5 years ago we were gonna go more online and potentially not need these big behemoth buildings. We do, but there was a question mark around the pandemic. So like, how do you as an architect think about the future of learning, but you have to deal with the present reality as well?
You're touching on a couple of really great things that has made my things firing off in my mind. The idea, Allie, about I mean, we've dealt with or worked with, we're working with a lot of districts that, yes, they passed a bond, but they were only able to do like HVAC retrofits and LED. And oftentimes those are projects that, kind of goes, like we advocate for districts, make sure that they're being right sized so that they are, that's a big thing. You could save a lot of money for starters by right sizing things, making sure an LED replacement. I've shared that Los Angeles Unified School District has a whole workflow for LEDs that helps ensure warranties, performance, all of the stuff is in line, so that you're not, for starters, throwing good money after bad, right? Let's if you're going to have to do these infrastructure improvements, which we know a lot of folks have to, make sure it's done right, so that you're not spending money that's, because we know that unfortunately, like UC Davis did a study in educational facilities, somewhere around 60% of mechanical systems weren't functioning properly within like the first year after they were installed, which is, I mean, they need to be tested and balanced, but like, so things like retro commissioning would be helpful. But just the first point was, let's make sure if you're doing one of these necessary infrastructures, that you're doing it right and it's being right sized. Looking at something we're looking a lot at is, because things changed so wildly during COVID, and is looking at capacity and utilization of facilities. Spaces are used differently, the different types of learning, so like looking at capacity and utilization of facilities, and the right sizing goes to facilities as well, to the point of like, how can we ensure that we're designing spaces that can ideally be used throughout the day in a number of ways, so you don't have siloed functions. Sometimes you can't avoid it, but I think it helps strengthen the community in a school too. Like this district that I was describing earlier, they view movement through a building and the fact that a building is occupied in multiple ways as like blood moving through your body or air being breathed. Stagnant spaces kind of suck energy, and so it increases a lot of things, campus safety, when you have spaces and passive supervision all over the place, when you have spaces that are used. So I think, just the idea of, and it strengthens the sense of community. So I think forever after, we need to be really thoughtful about about creating spaces that are right sized. How can they be adaptable? Build, do, if we need to build less, make sure that, like, we advocate for it to be as sustainable as possible. Life cycle analysis is really important. And if it means building a little bit less, to build it right so that it's going to be, as efficient as it can be as sustainable as it can be. Maybe we don't need as much space as we had before, in traditional thinking. We have spaces that are shared communal spaces that only strengthen a campus community. I think that's something we constantly have to be thinking about. It was being thought about a long time ago. I've been in buildings that are 100 years old that have excellent daylighting. Obviously, a lot has changed with technology, but I think, thinking about spaces that are aspirational, we always try to solve as many challenges with, lesser number of economical solutions, so that we're building in economy in our design solutions. Of course, we want, we strive for design excellence, but that's one of the key points, is how do you do it economically and have it still be aspirational and solve as many things as you can within the, a smaller number of moves. Does that
Is
answer
there?
you?
No.
There's a lot more that
Reality.
we're thinking
Right.
about reality. Thinking, yeah, you need to be future forward. Preparing, and be resilient facilities, and ensuring that students are being, exposed, having exposure to these environments that are preparing them for the future. Future spaces that they're going to be in. Kind of unschool school is what this district and that we're working with down in San Jose kind of thinks, likes to look at it, get inspired by spaces that students want to be in when they're not at school.
Yeah, 100%. And teachers, right?
And
Educators,
teachers, yes. I mean,
there's a shortage of us. So, like, if you can make a really nice place where we want to be, I'm sure you've seen everything. There's some of our offices are like back offices, like back closets, and there's all kind. I'm sure that you've seen all this. But then you add in just, I love the fact that to hear somebody who designs the educational experience, and I'll just call it an experience because it really is. It's the environment, to understand, like, look, we're really trying to look deeply into kind of the social emotional factors of anybody in that facility. I love like that arts area where it can be, they can do weddings or however. That's amazing. And to me, now I'm thinking about all the different theaters that are in schools that are, like you said, only used a handful of times. That's so smart. I don't know how else to say it, but I think it's a beautiful thing. Is and maybe this is like not in your area of expertise. However, I'm sure with funding and different things going on, how much is this now becoming attached to social emotional learning, which is the big key terms now, SEL, right? And because I think environments are they're very social emotional areas. Case in point is many schools, and it's not just ours, are having challenges in their restrooms, right? High schools, I'll just say that, maybe older middle and high school students. And it was interesting because I have conversations with my students all the time, like, what's going on in the bathroom? Why are you guys hanging out in there, right? And obviously, it's one of the places where there's no cameras, so they can kind of get away from, shenanigans. However, a lot of students will say exactly what you're building for this school in San Jose. We don't have a place for us to hang out. That's amazing. So now I'm going to say there's a school in San Jose, but what are, like, outside of that, what are some of the things that the things that you're seeing that are really starting to help? Maybe a project you did 5 years ago that is, well, 5 years you had COVID, but like, well, right around that time that you've seen, yo, we've been doing this, and this is what our clients have been telling us. Because I really do want you to redesign our school right now.
When can we start? We're seeing there was a lot of COVID funding that started to address mental health, and where mental health has been a prime topic of conversation since COVID, and that's been one of the silver linings, as well as things like outdoor learning and the significance of having outdoor learning environments. So there's a lot of folks that we're doing outdoor learning environments with as well. But we've worked with a local district on some schools that have incorporated family centers, so that they are truly kind of centers of the community, where parents can get legal help, they can get rental assistance, they can get food assistance, or there's just resources for the entire family. And these are building like facilities that are kind of connected to the main office. They're interconnected, but they're kind of like, it really is another reflection of these schools as centers of community and really taking care of the community's needs. Just the focus on, we're seeing a lot of spaces that are like these hangout spaces that that have different types of seating, small rooms that people can go into if they need to have private conversations, larger gathering areas, and they can also be joint use community spaces. But a lot more of these kind of health, like wellness centers is what some of them are being called, which is wonderful, because there's not adaptations of library spaces, so they're being kind of more flexible in terms of being an innovation hub. And again, the idea that there's different types of learning that in person, and there's still some hybrid and like higher ed environments. Campuses have kind of been turned inside out in terms of there's still a lot of hybrid learning going on, and then there's in-person learning. So it's providing these multiple types of spaces. I mean, there were a lot of silver linings on the universal experience that we all went through together and that we're all
Mm-hmm.
still in some ways coming out of. I mean, a lot of folks are still working remote, and how do you, I think one thing we're constantly thinking, how do you kind of remain connected? I appreciate so much. And again, you are folks that I need to let, that we listen to every day. And I would love to hear more about your experiences. I wanted to share something that I was thinking of earlier when you talked about being in these different types of rooms throughout the course of the day, and would love to like get your take on things that you love about the class, just this your favorite spaces and why. But I wanted to share, there was some students from Oakland High School who reached out to me in the last, it was during COVID, and they had just found me online, and because I have a sustainability leadership focus, they reached out to me, and these are students in the environmental design pathway at their high school. The high school is set up with different kind of learning pathways, and they have like small learning communities of several hundred that are in different, they choose this early on in high school. So they're going through this pathway, and they basically said, God, our high school is so old, it has no windows, and we're like, how could we improve our spaces? And knowing that there wasn't funding for it, we just, I was sharing with them the daylight studies and just, things about biophilia. And they came to my office, the time I was working in San Francisco. So they came to my office for a tour. And it was really wonderful just to chat with these young designers, basically. And then they shared their capstone project, which was really amazing. I can share the link with you, but they talked about, there's one teacher who really, in her room, she's got, or his room, I don't recall, just ways that they turned it into kind of like a second home. There were some lamps that with different kind of lighting. This was things they'd done themselves. Okay. They didn't have any, there was no architectural project, but it was really interesting to see that, the teacher who, kind of turned, and this kind of goes against what I was saying about like, it implies that this teacher had some ownership of the room to be able to do this, right? So, different kinds of graphics on the wall that were inspirations from nature, different types of seating. So, and they compared and they showed, this is a classroom we all love to hang out in. This is like our hangout classroom. And then these are classrooms that are really sad and people fall asleep and are feel really uninspired in. And it was everything that we're talking about. But it just goes, like they're, hopefully there'd be an architectural project where we could, embed that in the environment, right? Versus having teachers have, who already have a lot of challenges and financial challenges, needing to, put a lot of effort to creating the space themselves, right, Ellie and Peter? That shouldn't be the teacher's burden. It should be hopefully, hopefully it's a district can get community support to put money into their community's educational resources.
100%. So before we grab your information, it's interesting because if you're watching on the YouTube channel, a little sunlight there coming in on you there, Allie. So just FYI. I don't know if that was, did we plan that? What are your final thoughts, Allie?
One of the big takeaways, I was sitting here thinking about as you were talking about it, is, an easy starting point would almost be like a space audit of like what are the uses of the spaces in a building and how could we, use them better, right? I know that the high school that I last taught in, they kind of, the librarians took it upon themselves, and I don't know if they wrote a grant or whatnot, but they got funding to basically kind of redo all of the seating and kind of the layout of the library, and it became much more of a flexible space that is a hangout space. It is where everyone wants to be, and they have all these tables and chairs that kind of like, I think of it as like IKEA, they can like fold up really small or expand and be really big. They're multifunction in use, and they already had a great windows and lighting, but they did add all these different kind of nooks, and each one has its like each space has its own unique kind of feel and vibe, and kids love that. And I they had done an audit and with the library and realized it wasn't being used to its full capacity. And so, and there are other spaces in every building that kind of have this. And I wonder what could change if schools just kind of started there and started a conversation and being like, okay, well, we can't overhaul the whole building, but like, what are some underutilized spaces and how can we kind of make them so they're not single use, and they can be more dynamic? That's really what I was thinking about as you were talking.
Yeah, bringing people who like they want to be there, and it does
Yeah.
encourage learning. So I think the first step is you contact Mary and your firm. How can people connect with you, Mary, and learn a lot more about the amazing projects that you all are working on?
Well, I can share my email address is
Sure.
M. Rubenthal. So it's MRUPPENTHAL at HED.design. And then you can also find our website is simple. It's HED.design. You can find my contact information there and also folks from across the nation who work. We're a national firm, started in Detroit actually, but we have offices across the country, Chicago, Boston, LA, San Francisco. But check out our website. We have similarly passionate and committed resources nationally throughout the office that our firm promise is to maximize positive outcomes for in all of our projects for clients, community, and the world. And that might sound very aspirational, but that is our promise, and that's what we do every day, because we are responsible stewards of our environments. And so please reach out. We'd be happy to work with you, Peter. Please contact me if we can help you. And
Yes.
Allie, I've really enjoyed our conversation. I would love to hear more about the spaces that you love as and yes, the community of educators is I respect the work that you do every day, and I'm very grateful for the work that you do every day to make positive impact on in educational outcomes as well. So it's been really a pleasure to talk with you both.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And I'm very glad to hear that you are national. The thing is if you are one of our educators listening, even, I know like as teachers, we don't think we have a lot of power, but just the conversation starting with some of your local admin really starts to get things going. We are putting on an addition in our school, but we're also kind of redesigning some rooms that are not part of that addition, and they're being brought into the discussion because of it. So teachers, you do have the power to really kind of start talking to people in your community as well. And then obviously, seriously, if you are an admin, a board member, and you have this challenge of a rebuild or an addition or something like this, contact Mary because I haven't heard anything amazing as what you were describing in San Jose, and that's the kind of work that you do. So that's amazing. For Allie Privet, I'm Peter Hostrasser. Thanks again, Mary, for being here. We're Disrupt Education. We'll catch you next time on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Allie Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.